You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. I'd like to introduce you to my next guest, George Church. He is professor of genetics at Harvard Med School. He has green eyes, is right-hand dominant, is narcoleptic, and takes multivitamins. And that's just the beginning of what we know about Dr. Church, because he has put his genome online. You can all see it. And his new project encourages you to do the same thing, too. Do you want to put your genome online? Well, we'll talk about it. The Personal Genome Project offers to sequence pieces of your DNA in exchange for personal information about you, including your medical history, your diet, your physical traits. You have to be ready to part with that information. The other part of the bargain is that you have to make all that information, as I say, public. We all get to see it. Sound creepy? Too creepy to you? Well, the project already has 10 volunteers and about 6,000 people are waiting on a list to participate. Standing in line, Dr. Church joins us from the Gardner Foundation Symposium in Toronto. Welcome back to the program, Dr. Church.
Hello.
Tell us about the objectives of the project. What do we gain by reading everybody's genome online?
Well, this is part of a project that has goals of bringing down the cost of genomics so that everybody can afford it, the way we brought down the cost of computers so that everybody could afford them, and in make it more interpretable, basically to provide reasons to have genomes in computers, which is that you can connect to other people's information, in particular find correlations between medical and non-medical traits and your genes. This requires some level of sharing. This is not something that can be done in the laboratory just with chemicals. It actually requires community participation.
Do you find the community eager to jump in, or do you have to talk them into it? I see you have 6,000 people waiting online.
We definitely don't talk people into it. We spend most of our time talking people out of it. We only want the most enthusiastic and people who really know what they're getting into.
Is this database going to be massaged? What will happen to the database of all these people and their traits?
Well, we hope it's going to be like Wikipedia and Google and other things that people depend on and many people contribute to. We're trying not to restrict who we think are researchers who think exactly like us, maybe, you know, to specifically to kidney researchers. We actually want broadly defined social scientists, computer scientists, all kinds of people to look at this and contribute to looking at it from many different angles, the way you see in public web resources.
I'm trying to understand a little bit. Now, if you have all these thousands of people and their databases, what do I see that certain people have red eyes, some people are left-handed, some people have, you know, like to eat sushi? What will I learn from this giant database?
Well, the first set of things that we're going to focus on are the most debilitating diseases that affect the largest number of people. So very common diseases are something that requires a fairly simple set of information, but lots of it. But as people get interested in other things that are genetically determined in conjunction with environmental traits, environmental components, which we will also track, we can extend this to almost any trait that you can imagine that has any genetic and environmental components.
So you might be able to see, if you go into this Wikipedia sort of thing, whether you're susceptible to a disease or an allergy or something like that.
Exactly.
And you can see also whether your friends are, if they're on that line too.
That's not the objective, but that might be an outcome. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, since it's all going to be public, I mean, isn't that something that people should be concerned about, that if all their information is public, you'll see the bad stuff with the good stuff?
Absolutely. Anyone who isn't sharing that kind of information with their friends should probably think twice.
Mm-hmm. And how long will this project run for?
I'm hoping that it will make major progress in the next 5-10 years, and it may go on forever. I mean, it's really a matter of how useful it is and how long and how quickly it moves.
Mm-hmm. And how does someone get on the list here? If they want to become part of your database, what do we have to do?
Well, the first step is to go to personalgenomes.org. It's a simple website, personalgenomes.org, and then they'll take a test. The test is fairly simple. It might require some preparation for some people. You can take it as many times as you want, but you have to get 100% on the test to make sure you know what you're getting into. And then enter trait data, things like what ailments you've had and what drugs you've been prescribed. And then finally, some tissue samples will be taken. Mm-hmm. And the genome sequence is derived.
So when you say you have to get every question right, you want to make sure people understand what they're getting themselves into.
Exactly. The risks and the benefits of the study and enough knowledge. We don't expect them to necessarily be the world's experts in genetics, mm-hmm. but enough knowledge of genetics so they can explain to their family what's going on and make sure that the family is interested in it as well.
Now, you've had your genetic information online for a while. Have there been any unintended consequences for you?
Well, even before I put my genetic information, I think in a certain sense, at this point, your trait data is even more informative to the general public than the genetics, because not everybody's an expert on genetics, mm-hmm. and that's the point of the study, is to make the correlations. And there has been at least one interesting anecdote that came from having my cardiovascular information online, which is a hematologist from Seattle noted that I was not doing my cholesterol medication surveillance properly, and I went back to my primary care physician, and she said, "Oh yeah, that's absolutely right. Let's do this test." And that changed the way that I was dealing with this with this, and probably added several years to my life. So far, that's just, you know, there aren't too many anecdotes, and it's certainly not statistics, but it's pretty exciting, the possibilities there.
So people could see just scan through some other person's database and give them medical advice just from looking at the information that's up there.
Right. I mean, you need to have some way of filtering this. This was board certified hematologist, and I checked out whatever he said with my primary care physician. Going forward, it'll probably be software that does this in concert again with your primary care physician, mm-hmm. and the software will be written.
Mm-hmm. I have a question from you from Ted in Athens, Ohio. Hi, Ted.
Hey there.
Hi there.
I have a question. Is this database going to be able to be searched by name? And if so, like if I can, you know, look for somebody's name, and if so, is this a danger to employees if employers want to search them? Because now Googling an interviewee is somewhat of a common practice. And is this going to put people in jeopardy of not getting a job because they might have a debilitating disease?
Good question.
So, yeah, great question. We're not encouraging people to put their name online. But we are encouraging them to imagine that scenario where their name is attached to their data, because like almost any medical research, there are ways that given a rich data set, you can figure out who the person is. And there's many studies that have shown that this can be done. So we consider this actually a protection so that people who aren't okay with that understand it. In addition, so people are free to put their name there, and third parties are probably enabled to figure out what the names are. But in addition, there's this Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act, which was just signed into law by both houses of Congress and the president. And this prevents employers and insurance companies from discriminating based on genetics. Mm-hmm. Now, they've always discriminated based on pre-existing conditions. But that's something, if they care about it, they'll ask you about it. And then it's up to you as to whether you're going to tell them what they want to know or not.
So they can't look at a gene and say, I can see by that gene you have a pre-existing condition.
No. They can ask you about your pre-existing condition, and then most people are required to answer, feel like they're required to answer that question. Mm-hmm. Some people refuse to answer those questions.
Do you eventually think you're going to be charging for the service, or will people be able to create some useful product out of your service they might charge for?
Well, the intention, this is personalgenomes.org is a nonprofit organization. The intention is to make it freely available, but to encourage everybody to sort of raise money for their share and maybe a few other people, kind of the way you would do a walkathon and get your friends and associates to help. You know, there are real costs.
Right.
But we're trying to not make it too much of a burden on any individual person, because we want a very diverse set of people genetically and geographically and so on.
Well, good luck to you, Dr. Church.
Thank you.
Thanks for taking time to be with us.
Oh, my pleasure.
We were talking with George Church, professor of genetics at Harvard Med School, who is working on the Personal Genome Project. And if you'd like to sign up for it, you can go to our website at sciencefriday.com, and we have a link there that'll take you right to the Personal Genome Project, and you can take the test and see if you get 100.